This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show. And we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here. This is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
Let's begin with Tua Tagovailoa, because late last week, he released video of himself working out. Kind of. We know now because of the shutdown, because of the quarantines, we do not have NFL draft picks, potential draft picks, flying to and fro to their potential destinations. We know this. We also know that these NFL executives have to rely on previous game film, no pro days, etc. right now, and no combine for Tua because of the injury. So for Tua, with the hip injury and the ankle injuries, we've been waiting, salivating for any type of intel on whether or not he is ready to be drafted as high as he would likely go. We're talking about maybe him in the top three, top five, top six, but more than likely he is a top 10 pick next month. So Tua ends up releasing a video, which is about 9 seconds long or so, of him simulating being under center, dropping back to pass, and throwing a dart. Now, you should see the reaction to this. It is as though we have seen Patrick Mahomes' second coming. It's as though we were watching Joe Montana to Dwight Clark in the NFC Championship game. The response has been, oh my goodness, can you believe how good Tua Tagovailoa looks? And I have to admit, I'm rooting for Tua. Great kid, great leader, great college quarterback. But let's be honest, it's 9 seconds of video. Can we trust Tua Tagovailoa's health after less than 10 seconds of footage? It is where we begin your cold open.
I'm optimistic that I'll be able to play, you know, this upcoming season. But, you know, I think for me right now, you know, I'm more so worried about, you know, getting better as soon as possible. See what I can do, you know, if I can do a pro day, if I can't do a pro day. I mean, and then, you know, it's really all dependent on what the doctors, you know, have to say to the teams and, you know, what the results come back in as.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
Yeah, I would love to believe to his video right now, but I don't. But I don't. Because that's so different than being under center for 60 snaps a game and throwing 35 times and escaping the rush and getting hit and being tackled and being pushed out of bounds and being pushed into other players. It is so different. I mean, yes, we want to make sure that he looks good dropping back to pass. Yes, you want to see some fluidity from that hip. But, I mean, are we real here? Are we really going to drool over a 9-second video clip? I think here's the thing. People want to believe Tua's going to be great again because he was great in college and because he has all of the things that you look for in terms of a franchise quarterback. Really good head on his shoulders, winner in college, a guy that has put up really big numbers with his arm, and a guy that has the size to translate to the NFL. He's not some type of Jalen Hurts mobile QB that may or may not work because he uses his legs so much. No, Tua's a pocket passer. He is nimble in the pocket, but he's not a runner. Tua Tagovailoa is a tall, strong kid with a good arm that put up a lot of numbers at Alabama. But people want to believe it. And look, I'd like to believe that he's okay, but a little clip of a little video a month before he's drafted is not doing it for me. And this is why I'm really hesitant on spending a top 10 draft pick on Tua Tagovailoa, is that you just have so many question marks about his health at this point in time that how can you possibly take that risk in the top 10? I mean, if it's a luxury pick, I somewhat understand taking him in the top 10, but how many of these teams in the top 10 have a luxury pick? I mean, maybe you can consider the Dolphins a luxury pick because they have three choices in the first round, so if they blow it at number six, it's not the end-all be-all for them. But teams that will trade up, like perhaps the Dolphins would have to get up to get high enough to draft him, this has got to be your franchise guy. You don't blow this and then not pay ramifications for a long time. I'm too skittish on drafting Tua that high if it's my one and only, I've got to get this right quarterback pick. I really am. And look, I love Tua's intangibles and I love his college career. But not only is it the hip, he's got two significant ankle injuries, one on each ankle as well, that we're dealing with. And so dropping back to pass, a little 9-second video on social media, is not enough to ease my fears. I see a lot of people going, oh, wow, he looks great. I can't go that far at this point. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 on Twitter. DA on CBS. Mraz, what do you think? That video of Tua Tagovailoa, did it ease your concerns about his health at this point in time? He did look fluid.
I don't think there's anything that could ease my concerns about Tua. And you just touched on a little bit of this. We haven't even gotten to the 2020 football portion of the program yet. And since 2018, you mentioned both ankles being a problem for Tua. Obviously, the hip. He's also had a tweaked knee in there, a broken finger, and a quad injury. Look, when I'm drafting a franchise quarterback, and I'm sure we all feel the same way, you, Bogus, Pete the Body, I want a guy I know that I could hope is out there every single Sunday. And if that's just a taste of what we had with Tua the last 2 years at Alabama, and granted, I understand he was great amidst all the injuries, how can I at the next level expect this guy to be out there for the most part 95% of the games over the next decade? Because that's another part of this. When you're taking a franchise quarterback that high, like some of these teams are going to do, it's not about next year. It's not about 2 years from now. Sure, you want it to be great. It's about relying on this guy for the next 10 years. And I don't know how, based off what we've seen in the last 2 years of Tua's injury history, how you can expect him to stay healthy at the next level.
Let me ask you this. If he did not suffer the hip injury against LSU, if he did not injure his hip, and we were looking at just the ankle injuries from the last couple of years, would you still be skittish?
I would be less skittish than I am, but still somewhat skittish, yes. And to be fair, I probably didn't fully register all of the ankle and every other injuries until the major hip injury. Because once that comes out and you read up more and you go, oh, yeah, he's had this. Oh, yeah, he's had this. Now, it's not my job, since I'm not an NFL scout, to have studied those things. But, yes, I would have been slightly skittish. But the hip is a major, major injury. So, yes, he seems to be progressing nice based on 9 seconds. But that's still a major injury to overcome. And ultimately, how can you expect the hip not to have ramifications? And I know some guys are different. I mean, I'm not trying to compare Tua, a world-class athlete, to, you know, people or family members, but I've seen young people in my life have some kind of hip injuries, and it seems like they're always just off after that. This is top medicine. I know that sounds insane, but I cannot rely on this guy to be healthy. He's a franchise quarterback. He's a guy you're putting your job into drafting that high in the draft with this injury history.
And let me just correct myself. Against LSU, he was healthy, obviously, the entire game. That was that wonderful back and forth last year.
But he didn't look healthy. He played good, but he didn't look healthy.
True. The following week is when he injured the hip against Mississippi State. Are you just drawing on your experience of Peter Schwartz having a hip injury? Is that what you're saying here? Because he took a full year to come back after the beach injury that you don't trust Tua?
You know, truth be told, I actually was referencing one of my uncles who was never a good softball player again. But now that you mention it, you're right. I totally forgot about the Peter Schwartz hip injury. That was a guy who needed tennis balls on a walker for basically 8 months to get back after a bad beach football injury.
He's still milking that injury a year and a half later.
He had to lean on Dennis Byrd for obviously, you know, getting over it. It's unbelievable. Yeah, so if you're looking at Peter Schwartz's timeline, how can you put a top five pick into Tua?
For those that don't know this backstory, 2 Julys ago, I believe, he was playing beach football with his kids. He ran a play, I think, he wasn't automatic quarterback, right?
Well, he was. So I could just give you a quick play-by-play, Jason
Wilkins
style.
Yes, please.
All right, so this would be, picture your mind, we're at Jones Beach, Long Island, July of 2018. Schwartz, automatic quarterback, one son playing defense, the other son on offense. Schwartz drops back to pass. Oh, he flips it backward to Jared. There's Schwartz running a wheel route. Bradley doesn't know who to cover. Jared delivers it to Schwartz. Schwartz rumbles up the sideline. Oh, the turf monster got him. He's writhing in pain. What is wrong? The medics are on the field. Oh, Schwartz has blown out his hip. There will be no free Miller's Ale House tonight. The stretcher is out. The hospital is here. We'll report. We'll get Leslie Visser in a little bit to discuss what happened to Peter Schwartz as he gets wheeled off to the hospital. But again, there will be no Kids Eat Free tonight.
Well done, Mraz. That's good play-by-play. You know what? That's some of your best work that I've heard in a long time.
Can you tell I'm bored this morning?
I think so. We have you now in the dojo of death against Bogish calling Schwartz's hip injury. So Schwartz crumples down into just a lump on the beach. It turns out he blew out his hip. He then does he get a replacement hip?
I believe they went new. Well, how does that work? Are we getting a hip from a cadaver or is it metal? Metal.
No, I think it's either plastic or metal. Anyway, they replace his hip. It takes him a full year to rehab. He's on crutches.
Right.
I think it's crutches, or no, it was a walker, as you said, with tennis balls on the bottom that he's walking around CBS Sports Radio with. He then ends up making his rehab story supposed to be this inspirational journey where he's tweeting about this incessantly, using Dennis Byrd, the former New York Jets defensive, and then that was paralyzed at a game, as his avatar for inspiration. He finally loses the walker. We are walking with him, proverbially, in this rehab. And then he returns to Jones Beach, the site of the injury, 1 year later, to then finish the play. And he finishes the play and posts all about it. So knowing that it took a full year for Schwartz to come back from his hip injury, I do wonder what the true timetable is for Tua, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, those now are the only two big-time quarterbacks we've seen with the same injury. So you have to ask the Dolphins their thoughts on drafting Schwartz before drafting Tua.
So Andrew Bogus joins us this morning here on the show. Knowing the timeline of Schwartz's injury, what do you think that means? What do you think that portends for Tua?
Yeah, I mean, it makes no medical sense to compare Peter Schwartz to Tua Tagovailoa, but I don't know how we don't, because it happened right in front of us, and it was such an indirect route to clean health.
Yeah, I know. And so when you look at that timeline, Bogues, when you look at that timeline, it's hard really to trust Tua's hip for the draft, isn't it?
It is, but the problem is I don't want to be the guy that didn't take Tua/Schwartz. I'd rather have him and have the hip crumble on my watch than pass on him and have him return to peak Schwartz for somebody else and be full of regret that I didn't take him when I could have.
I do think there's one interesting parallel here that we should think about. You know, Schwartz was on 2 good ankles. Tua has had 2 injured ankles in the last couple of years. So is that more concern that Schwartz, Bogues, can blow out a hip on 2 good ankles, whereas Tua, he's been limited?
That's a good point. I'd also add that the extra jockalones that Schwartz carries would also make it more obvious or more logical that he'd have a hip injury. What spooked me about Tua is this is a guy in his prime having such a catastrophic injury. So I certainly share your concerns, but I think in the end game, I'm still taking Tua and or Schwartz, assuming they get back to their peak. I'm going to trust the doctor here. If we can get Schwartz healthy, they can get Tua healthy, and then he can be my quarterback.
What's also awesome is that Schwartz documented his rehab every step of the way, kind of like Tua is doing right now. I kind of wonder if Tua has taken a page, Mraz, out of the Schwartz playbook, making sure everybody is on top of his rehab every step of the way.
But here's the problem. If Schwartz was only giving me a 9-second video of his rehab, I'd be more prone to stick with it. The problem is I got the 2-minute long, everything breaking down.
I'll see your Schwartz and raise you a Schwartz.
Do you remember that day when when he aired the clips of him practicing his sign-on for the first time as he worked his way back? And we can finally hear, I'm Peter Schwartz, for the first time in a long time. And he was changing his level and his baritone and going up and down in different mic positions. I mean, that was a very happy day, the first time we got a glimpse at a rehabbing Peter Schwartz.
I like stuffing.
Him silhouette in front of Nassau Coliseum, just limping on in.
It was an emotional time for all of us. Schwartz's rehab back. I mean, really, let's face it. It was one that America will never forget. We were constantly searching for Schwartz updates. What is happening next? What is his status? And finally, he's 100% back and crushing Little Debbie's ho-hos and cakes every single day once again.
I think we're just waiting for now Donald Trump over the next 2 weeks to lean on Schwartz's rehab for how the country can respond now. And then I think we've really hit peak ridiculousness.
No question.
Yeah, what medal can we give Schwartz for his valiant return from this hip injury?
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Mark Jackson was the coach of the Splash Brothers before they became champions. He was on SiriusXM NBA Radio and says he wants to coach again.
Well, I look forward to, you know, I had a great time coaching my 3 years in Golden State. It was a wonderful experience, and I truly look forward to coaching again. I have the best job possible, working with incredible friends, people I love, and I value the job and the experience I'm getting calling games. It's a tremendous blessing, and at the same time, I love impacting players. I love competing, and I look forward to coaching again one day.
I think that he will. In fact, I'm a little surprised he hasn't already. Mark Jackson has the itch. He's been up for jobs. He's certainly been connected to many jobs. He's around the game as a broadcaster. I think there will be a door that opens up for Mark Jackson here, whether it's in the NBA or college soon enough. But like I said, I'm a little surprised he has not coached already. There's some thoughts that behind the scenes, Mark can be difficult to work with. Has some controversial opinions. Maybe you don't want to hit your wagon to those if you're in a certain climate or a certain market. But I think that ultimately Mark Jackson will get an opportunity to coach again. And I don't think it's going to be very long, because the moment that there's this turnover this offseason, you know, one thing he might be hurt by is that the college basketball season ended, and without really knowing the end of it, it'll mean that more universities don't fire their coaches. You know, especially in this economic water, you're not going to just keep buying out your guys. And so he might have to wait another year. But with NBA openings, we would imagine late summer. Although, again, maybe there's going to be such a short offseason, it could hurt him. But I do think that ultimately, one day in the near future, Mark Jackson is a head coach again. Yesterday, right here on CBS Sports Radio, Mike Francesa hosted a Sunday show. We followed him, actually, here on CBS Sports Radio. And he believes that late summer into fall could actually be the perfect season ever for sports fans.
All these events are going to get jammed into a couple of months where we are going to have sports Shangri-La. Well, we are not only going to have something to watch every minute, we are going to have a major event where every day is going to be like Christmas if you're a sports fan. You are going to have so many events jammed into such a tight window. So for every day you don't have an event and every day you don't have a game, you were going to get it back. And it's going to be like, are you kidding me?
I hope that he's right. I hope that's exactly the way that it is. But the only problem with that theory is that what happens if things just get canceled? Like, we don't get more March Madness. We don't next year get two March Madnesses. That just got canceled. And let's just hypothetically say the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs get canceled. We don't get that back. It doesn't get shoehorned into next season. It's just, that's gone. Same thing with the NBA season. Same thing with people talking about Major League Baseball. You know, the idea here that I think Mike is talking about is the big events, if they do pull them off, will feel like they keep coming fast and furiously. If we get the NBA postseason, if we get Major League Baseball's dash to the finish line, if that coincides with football and it coincides with the Kentucky Derby, etc., that would be great. It's not going to be great if these things are just flat out canceled. And finally here, as part of Soundcheck, we've got Scott Boras on MLB Network Radio discussing what happens with World Series week if the league gets pushed back.
You know, I always advanced a couple of things. One is having a seven team where we have 45% of our league in the playoffs, and that's certainly a possibility. And having a World Series week where we can have seven consecutive days of play if needed, or five or whatever, and have notice where we're going to have it at, and having a gala for all the awards there, and have all the stars there, have a reason for teams to bring their season ticket holders there. There's just so much advancement that we can grow the game and provide really a proper stage for the World Series, other than it'd be a last minute where basically you really don't know if you can plan for a World Series until the potentials of a week to 2 weeks under our schedule.
So I don't love this idea unless it's a situation like this year, because I don't like taking away home games from World Series fan bases in stadiums. I mean, let's face it, the Yankees not playing the World Series at Yankee Stadium would feel really hollow. The Dodgers not playing their home games in the World Series at Dodger Stadium would feel ridiculous. Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, these are the cathedrals of the sport. Having the World Series there is good. Putting it in Globe Life Park because there's a dome and we can set it up, putting it at Petco Park, to me, is a loss. It's not ideal. This year, you might have to do it because you might be pushing up against bad weather in November, and so you want a neutral site that you can guarantee good weather. I get that. But Scott Boras's idea that every year they should make it a neutral site so that there can be a fan fest or a red carpet awards around it, to me, is stupid. You're taking away the soul of baseball, the home stadiums for World Series games, that you can get a red carpet event. I mean, come on. So you can invite sponsors to it. Plus, it also happens during football season. If you want to do that, blow up All-Star Weekend. That's when baseball should really put its face on the sport and where it stands in culture, and it's got the calendar to itself, and you know where it's going to be, and that's the time to do it. But making the World Series the time where there's a red carpet event and a neutral site for sponsors, I mean, stupid. And that's your sound check this morning. So how about this story? Kobe Bryant's final game happens. He scores 60 points. We remember that very, very well. And after the buzzer, he delivers his Mamba out speech to the crowd at Staples Center. You probably remember this. And during this, you may remember he also has a towel draped over his shoulder. It's just a towel that was used during the game to basically dry off his brow, etc. Well, as he walked off the court, a fan snatched that towel. And now it's been sold multiple times. In fact, it was just sold again over the weekend. Now, of course, Kobe Bryant memorabilia has gone through the roof since his passing in January. How much would you guess that Kobe Bryant's towel went for? Okay, There were 16 bids on this lot. Now, the lot not only included the towel from his final game where he performed the Mamba out speech, but also two tickets from that game. So two ticket stubs from that game and the towel. What would you guess for a towel and two ticket stubs from his final game? Maybe, would you say $5,000? Pump it up. $10,000. Even more. $15,000. Would you spend $15,000? That's a nice car. Even more. $20,000. Nope. Even more. $25,000. Keep going. More than $25,000 for two ticket stubs and the towel that Kobe used in the Mamba out speech. This lot went for $33,000. In fact, it came up to $33,077.16. I'd like to know how they got to the 16 cents part. $33,000. $33,000. The man who bought the towel and the two tickets, reportedly a devoted Lakers fan. This is from the president of the auction. His long-term plan is to create a museum in Southern California. Apparently, the same bidder also spent $30,000 on an old yearbook from Kobe's middle school days. Okay, well, you're going to have to make back a lot of money on that museum for $65,000 going to a yearbook and a towel. Woo, boy. Now, Mraz, you and I differ on this. I'm not a huge memorabilia guy. You really like memorabilia. Not saying there's anything wrong with it, but you tend to have more stuff in this realm than I do. What do you think about $33K for Kobe's towel?
I think the only way I'm spending $33K on anybody's towel, forget Kobe's towel or anything, is if literally we've gotten to the point where I can't find a roll of toilet paper. That is not something I am spending on that right now at all. To me, look, I have memorabilia, but I'm more into jerseys or something of that ilk. I start to lose focus when people are overspending on somebody's cleat or NBA sneaker that they might have worn at some point. I think once you get to ridiculous parts of the game, I mean, when you want to get a base, like, you know, Ricky Henderson steals a base and you want that base, I guess that's cool. But when you get to towels and mouthpieces and just gross parts of this, like we did that story a couple years ago, somebody's gum that was spit out during a baseball playoff game or something went for a crazy amount of money. I mean, the guy sweated on a towel. He didn't wear it. That's gross. No, $30,000? You're telling me I can get it on eBay for $11? Maybe. $30,000? What, are you crazy?
Yeah, I can't see $30K for almost anything that I would spend money. I mean, I guess I would have to have that type of money to just frivolously spend it on crazy stuff like that. If, though, he's developing a museum, does it give him a little bit more leniency? I mean, here's the thing. Would you walk through the museum and be like, oh, wow, a yearbook from middle school. Oh, yeah, there's the towel that he had. I mean, to me, game-worn jersey from one of the NBA finals. The basketball that perhaps, you know, he used in that game. Maybe something from the slam dunk contest, a game shorts from when he won the slam dunk contest. These are things that I think I could get behind. I don't know if I really would care about seeing the towel from his Mamba out press conference.
And to that point, DA, I don't know how often or maybe the last time you were at any sort of Hall of Fame. I enjoy them. I enjoy all of them. But part of what makes any of these Hall of Fames or museums cool is that when they have the memorabilia up, usually next to it's kind of a small picture of said player and whatever piece of equipment or anything like that. And it kind of, you could put a picture and put in your mind, it take you back to watching that game, let's say, or whatever is going on. You can't have a picture or take you back and go, oh, I remember Kobe washing his face with that towel. I mean, come on, that's not
well, you can remember it. You can have a picture of him with the microphone and that final Mamba out speech with the towel over his shoulders.
I guess, but now you're going to go, oh, yeah, how many people even remember that he had the towel on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. It doesn't feel all that memorable. I mean, here's the thing. Clearly, the price got jacked up because Kobe passed away. I mean, that's the biggest part here. My guess is if he was still alive, that towel doesn't go for even half that, right? I mean, I think that's the huge hook here.
I agree that it definitely got enhanced because of the unfortunate passing, but it's still Kobe Bryant, and people seem to spend ridiculous amounts of money on ridiculous memorabilia when it comes to star players. So I don't know about half that. I mean, could that towel have gone for $20,000? Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think the Kobe market has exploded for obvious reasons. And I don't know, there's also something that feels a little icky about all of this. Like we're auctioning off Kobe's towel two right. months after he passes away. There's just something that I'm uncomfortable with about this whole thing. And okay, some people would argue, well, now it's time to honor him, and that's what these guys are doing, that they're bidding on this. But there's always something that's a little unseemly about, you know, bidding on things that people wore or used just so shortly after a tragic passing. I mean, Kobe's only been gone for 2 months. Can we hold off on the auction for a little bit here? I mean, can we give it some time to breathe? I mean, I know with coronavirus, it feels like that was a million years ago, but it's still only 2 months ago. We have time for auctions here. I don't know. It just felt like, do we really need to do this now?
Yeah.
When we come back. What was that?
No, I was going to say, I agree. I'll talk to you in a break.
When we come back here on the show, we have two more voices that say they knew Tom Brady was leaving. We'll discuss coming up here next. Should more of the world, the sports world, have known? DA, CBS Sports Radio. Andrew Bogish. Isn't that right? Andrew Bogish is standing by with your headlines this morning. Good morning, Andrew.
DA, good morning. So for the first time since 2005, the Chargers will have a starting QB not named Philip Rivers. 224 consecutive starts for the man who is now an Indianapolis Colt. At the moment in L.A., Tyrod Taylor is number one on the depth chart. The veteran QB telling the OC Register over the weekend, quote, "If I am the guy that would be calling the shots, I know for sure that we'll go out and turn a lot of heads." Taylor did not specify if people will be turning their heads away from his offense. The Bolts could definitely draft a QB next month or sign another vet like Cam Newton or Jameis Winston. Was that an unnecessary shot at Tyrod Taylor on a Monday morning?
Well, it's probably unnecessary, but it's useful. I mean, it gets us a good chuckle here, and I think that there's actually truth to that. I mean, right now, if you're a Chargers fan, not that Philip Rivers was any great shakes last year with all the turnovers, but do you feel confident with Tyrod Taylor as your opening day starter without any competition? Now, I'm sure that the Chargers will draft somebody. That's kind of the plan here. But Tyrod Taylor opening up brand new SoFi Stadium as the starting quarterback of the Chargers, I would say underwhelming would be the adjective.
Now, Tyrod's not the reason, but the rest of the offense and the switch to the baby blue as the predominant blue in their uniform, I'm once again sucked back into this Chargers vortex. They've always been my favorite non-Giants team.
Is that right? I didn't realize that. Simply because of the lightning bolt, the uniforms?
The uniform's been great. Rivers has been entertaining, even going back to LT. I mean, at one point, they were the team that I thought could keep me from more Patriots, Brady, Super Bowls.
Of course.
They kept letting me down. And they've been so good at being 8-4 and finishing 8-8, or being 4-8 and finishing 8-8 and making December interesting. So they've always dragged me in. I always want to get away. I should be away now, but they keep making these tiny little things like giving me powder blue predominantly that make me want to go back and love them again.
Did you root for them in the 94 Super Bowl when they got thrashed by Steve Young and the Niners?
I cannot speak for 14-year-old me. I think my Charger love is a more recent thing.
Okay.
So I don't think back then I was pulling for them. That's more of a post-college, almost adult me thought. The San Diego Superchargers song is a fun song. Now, that goes back to the 70s. But no, this is a fairly more recent love affair between me and the Bolts.
Because I really like that 94 Chargers team. Remember, that is a Cinderella team. The Chargers team, I believe, goes to Three River Stadium to beat the heavily favored Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship game. That's the Stan Humphrey's Natron Means Business San Diego Chargers that had a really fun team that won a lot of games late, coached by Bobby Ross, and then got absolutely slaughtered in that Super Bowl. Mm. Steve Young, 6 touchdowns, I think he threw that game as the MVP. But you're right, the Chargers have a lot of reasons to suck you in and then spit you out. But you know, the one thing that won't suck you in is seeing Tyrod Taylor under center week one.
When we last spoke on Friday, the Ravens walked away from their deal with D-lineman Michael Brockers over concerns with one of his ankles. Since then, Baltimore has signed former Broncos D-lineman Derek Wolfe. It's a one-year deal with $3 million guaranteed. The Lions are signing former Packers receiver Geronimo Allison, and Washington adds former Philly corner Ronald Darby. Now, he's talented, but missed 28 games over the last three seasons. The Knicks announced on Saturday that owner James Dolan has coronavirus, but only minor symptoms. Celtics guard Marcus Smart said last night he's now 100% healthy. And a construction worker at SoFi Stadium in L.A. is sick, but the project continues with the already in place extra safety precautions.
I wonder if the fact that so many high-profile cases, Rudy Gobert, Marcus Smart, Tom Hanks and his wife, James Dolan, if the fact that these high-profile cases have led to either no symptoms or light symptoms, Sean Payton, led people to a false sense of confidence. You know, the people that were going out for spring break and the people that were still congregating in parks and streets, because the death toll is real. It is a dangerous, dangerous virus, even for young, healthy people. There are examples of that. And yet, I still think that people don't really necessarily, unless you're maybe on the coast and you have seen the destruction, feel that it's really dangerous, that maybe it's going to take a high-profile case of somebody being in really perilous danger, don't you think?
Yeah, and we touched on this, I think, with Marcus Smart, maybe. Somebody else triggered this conversation between you and I, and it's an odd thing to think, like, that nobody wants a serious issue for a famous person, but there are still so many people who seem to not really grasp what's going on or trying to downplay how real this is. And because of, we normally listen to fancy people, to famous people, so maybe that helps the cause, but nobody wants that. But yeah, I would guess there's got to be some people who go, oh yeah, you know what? If I get it, I'll be fine. No big deal, because they're only thinking about themselves,
yeah,
and everybody around them, or the tax they put on the system by just getting sick.
Well, and there are many, many cases of high-profile celebrities being fine. I mean, so you could see people saying, well, if that person's fine, or that person's fine, or that person's fine, or that person's fine, then I'll be fine. But we just had a CBS journalist who passed away yesterday who came down with the illness, and she was only 54. There was a famous Japanese actor, I believe. He was in his 70s, I think, but he also passed away from it. Michael Pittman, former NFL running back's father, passed away, or uncle passed away from it over the weekend as well. And we're kind of touching famous people, but not quite the famous people. And you know, I don't want that to have to happen for people to really wake up and realize how dangerous this can be, even if you are healthy. I mean, you know, there are people that went to a Miami Beach concert in early March who were in their 30s who contracted it and fell ill and passed away that quickly. I mean, this is like 3 weeks ago, and this person was in his 30s. And so there's significant death toll to people that are even supposedly healthy, which is what makes this so vital to stay home, to stay safe, and to wash your hands and to stay away from people. Because I just hope it doesn't take a famous person falling ill and then passing away to where people finally go, oh, I guess this is really severe.
Yeah, and DA, yeah, DA, on that point, what's very scary is everybody keeps talking about the underlying issues here and how, oh, I don't have an underlying issue, so I have nothing to worry about. There have been stories out there, and I just want to jump in and can't stress this enough, of people who might be unaware of an underlying issue they may have had, even as a young person in their 30s, their 20s, or their 40s, that may have gone undiagnosed, that makes this worse if they contract it. So don't just assume you are Teflon because nothing in your medical history has told you you had another underlying issue. You may have one that you are unaware of, and hence it could become bad news. So just please, please stay at home and don't assume you're Superman.
Exactly. That Japanese comedian was Ken Shimura, who passed away at 70 after contracting coronavirus. So there's, I mean, imagine somebody that was really famous here in the States passed away due to it. It would finally wake up some people. I mean, some people are obviously very concerned right now, but some people are still not as concerned. But anyway, okay, thank you, Andrew. Or continue with the updates, because I don't think you're done.
I am not. So we spent a lot of time last week discussing MLB's agreement with its players for handling their suspended season. The biggest headline was players getting a year of service even if no games are played, which means guys like Mookie Betts are free agents next winter no matter what. MLB Network Radio's Jim Duquette told us yesterday optimistic owners made that concession.
That's where, you know, you kind of piece things together. MLB was willing to give up that service time. They really don't want to, but I feel like they were willing to do it because they were anticipating a good chance that we were going to at least try to play a half a season.
And again, the flip side in what the owners got, if you're connecting dots, is players have agreed not to fight for full salary this year. They're getting an advance and then will only get paid if their games after that. Reports last week said the league and the players are really hoping they can be on the field in June.
Which is Georgetown an interesting dynamic here as well, because you might think, well, the players don't want to play because they're going to feel like they are put in harm's way. They'd have to travel. They'd have to be around other people. Obviously, games are not played in quarantine necessarily, so they're around at least their teammates, other players, medical staff, team staff, what have you, even if there's no fans. But the players want to play as well because that's the only way that they would get a full salary. They don't want to go into 2020 and make half of their salary. Nobody would. None of us would. So there's an emphasis and an impetus for the players to want to play as many games. That's why when you hear, well, how about two doubleheaders, seven innings apiece every week? And you go, well, why would the players ever agree to that? They'd agree to that because they want their game checks.
And we'll hear more from Duquette about that, maybe in the 9:30 update, if I can tease my own work 2 hours from now. Reports across the Atlantic say Wimbledon will be canceled, with an official announcement coming Wednesday, postponing the grass court event, Sean. It's really not possible because the weather becomes too unpredictable in London once we get to late summer. And iRacing stalwart Timmy Hill won NASCAR's simulated race at Texas Motor Speedway yesterday. I believe it's time to be stunned. Am I correct?
You are, yes. Let's get stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Now, as we all know, these are very difficult times, guys. We are all on edge. We all have our own ways of blowing off steam. For some, that may be blasting your favorite tunes. That's what Benjamin Leyland was doing recently, but a neighbor in Manchester, New Hampshire, thought the music was too loud, so he knocked on Leyland's door and asked him to turn it down. Now, we assume he asked politely, but maybe he didn't, because Leyland allegedly picked up a 2.5-foot knife and chased the man down the hall.
Oh, dear.
That's a knife.
Now, for those of you scoring at home, a 2.5-foot knife is 30 inches, which is 0.44 linear jocalones.
Okay.
That's a lot to swing. Luckily,
Does it become a sword at that point?
I don't know what constitutes a sword, but 2.5 feet, that's like machete to me. Like you're hacking a trail through the jungle with that kind of blade, no?
That's a monster. 2.5 feet, that is almost, like you said, half a jocalone. That's 44 out of 100 jocalones. So that's a big, big, big knife. I mean, think about that in front of you. That's nearly a yard.
You ain't cutting a skirt steak with that, that's for sure.
I mean, you could. It would be very easy.
That's what this guy wanted to do, cut this guy's skirt steak off.
Luckily, he didn't actually use the knife on his neighbor. He got back into his apartment safely, and Mr. Leyland charged with criminal threatening. But this is why I don't mess with people, right?
Because this is why you don't play your music loud?
Well, if my neighbor's doing it, I let them do it because you don't know if there's a 2.5-foot sword right next to them at their front door.
It's a fair point. Have you ever gotten into like a road rage incident? Not that you were raging potentially, but somebody did something terrible to you on the road. They cut you off in a really dramatic thing, or they buzzed by you on the highway and swerved into your lane, or just something really, really dangerous. And you're like, my God, I would totally want to tell this person off. And then you realize, but I have no idea if they have a 2.5-foot sword in their car right now.
Exactly. See, I wish on the road, I wish you could cause, I wish accidents weren't bad. Like they were like, we were all in bumper cars.
You wish accidents were not bad.
Yeah, like if someone was being a jerk, you know, the guy that's doing 90 in mile traffic on the highway, weaving in and out of lanes in his souped up, you know, Honda Civic. I'd love to just spin that guy out and be like, this is what happens when you drive like a jerk. Like, stop doing this. But accidents are not
bogus.
Safe
wants
and
it to
okay.
be Mario Kart out there.
Yeah,
no,
right.
I don't
exactly.
want to be Mario Kart.
So, have either of you guys ever had a neighbor that you absolutely hated because they were either playing music really loud, or remember I had the crying baby in my apartment every single day? It was so awful, and they were so loud. You guys ever have like a really terrible neighbor?
No, as a matter of fact, I feel like I might be the terrible neighbor.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I'm always the guy playing the music loud or doing whatever, having people over way too late. I'm probably that guy that people hate.
You're also the guy that cuts his armpit hair in the front yard, right?
That's a good point. Right out there, buzz it all off. Did the back last night.
Because your roommate hates you.
Bogus, ever a terrible neighbor?
Yeah, me and my wife had battles with the people that lived above us in our first, well, in our second apartment. And it was worse for me because at that point I was working nights. So I was home all day listening to them being terribly loud. Like, you know, we live in an apartment. It was old. It was creaky. And the woman, this was a, I guess maybe in their 60s, maybe a little bit older. So, you know, certainly almost an elderly couple, which made us feel bad having these battles. But the woman used to pace the hallway that, like, cut the apartment in half, up and back and
in
forth
her wooden
all day
shoes.
Long. So all I heard was the thumping and the creaking of the floor over and over again early in the morning when I was trying to sleep from working nights and late nights. And I went up there one time to just very politely be like, could you please maybe just keep it down a little bit? And their initial reaction was just screaming at me and slamming the door in my face. Like, we had to have the building come in and like mediate, had the super
wow,
try and talk
building
to them to
mediation
calm down.
Between the Boguses.
Well, it was really bad and really unnecessary, and it was constant. And their argument was she needed exercise, and her exercise was pacing her apartment, not going outside and walking the street of Queens where she wouldn't have been bothering anybody. Instead, she made my days living hell. So yeah, that was not a good sequence in the bogus family history.
Wow, so Mrs. Huckleberry's exercise was pacing back and forth for hours at a time on wooden clogs right above you.
Right, well, and you know, like you're supposed to an apartment, I think in our agreement was like 70% of it's supposed to be carpeted to prevent such things. And there's definitely weren't. And that was kind of our thing, was like, don't make us be the annoying like stickler for details. Like, everybody wants to do their own thing, and they wouldn't budge an inch. It was ugly. They wouldn't talk to us on the elevator. It was bad.
What happens if you knocked on their door and old man Huckleberry brought out a 2.5 foot long sword? Did that come up in mediation?
there was no threat of violence. And I actually ended up feeling bad for him because I think he realized that his wife sucked, but it was his wife, so he had to be on her side in all this. Because at one point, he kind of was like, I have to defend my wife here. We're trying our best. It was almost like a plea for help. Like, you don't know what my life is like. So the thumping above you is like simple problems. I've got her all the time. So try to cut me some slack here.
It's got to be tough when you realize your spouse sucks. It's just, it's got to be a tough thing.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
So over the last couple of weeks, we have attempted to fill the void of no games by digging into our archives, and today is no different. We go back 2 years ago, March the 30th, 2018, as Pete the Body Bilotti began getting ready for wedding number two. He decided he would go on a diet, and this is where Mraz starts throwing stones. Pete the Body, did you indulge in any of the donuts on Donut Friday?
It's a test. I open the box and then I close it.
Does it give you some sense of satisfaction?
It gives me some satisfaction. I come in here asking more.
There's been smaller baked goods that were in boxes that he's picked up the box and like looked at the, you know, the health information, the calorie count and whatnot, and then put it back down.
Hey, I give you credit, Pete. And so you're down for the wedding?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to lose the weight for the wedding and just for my well-being.
Sure.
Very good.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing in his hometown. He's getting fatter here weekly. Let's just be fair.
That's wrong.
It really is.
It's accurate. It may be mean.
I don't think that Pete is getting heavier.
I am watching his girth every day come close. How do you think these drops are getting fired now? His belly's hitting every button.
Now I hope you have to eat the whole jar of this hot, hot, hot sauce.
That's right.
We want to pile on me for being fat and credit him for dieting.
The guy
is blowing up here.
Chubbo.
I don't see that at all. I do not see Pete gaining weight. The guy's not eating donuts. The guy's eating chicken and rice every single day.
Very moist.
I guess the glass is warped here, separating us.
You're cruel.
He's a botchagaloop now.
You're cruel.
Went down that road.
He went down that road.
The botchagaloop road.
Botchagaloop.
And there ain't no turning back. People are going to hate me. I'm going to give them a reason to hate me. That's it.
There's plenty of reasons to hate you.
No, I'm the nicest man, the nicest fellow.
Such a nice guy saying that Pete, who's been on a disciplined diet for months now, is getting fat.
You know what?
You're a great guy. What a kind fellow.
I think I'm a lost cause.
I'm losing weight like nobody's business. Nobody says anything to me. But, oh, Pete, you're close to donut box. Look at you, big guy. Come on.
So you're just jealous of the positive attention that he's getting.
Hey, I work my tail off. I get no attention. He gets attention because he's saying he closed in a box when he could be going home pounded through bags of chips.
So
we don't know what he does at home.
So you just want positive attention, and if you don't get it, you will tear down everybody around you.
If they deserve to be torn down.
Nice. 2 years ago, Mraz tearing down Pete the Body as he prepared for his diet for his wedding number two. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. Mraz, any guilt listening back? Any regret listening back to that clip?
No. The only thing that's changed is I have further mindset of why is it always that my body is the only one that's fair game on this show? Everybody else's image you can't touch, but me, if I'm out there, it's, oh, there's Mraz, he's fat again. Everybody else, it's, you know,
Wait a second here, okay? Number one,
fat.
We make fun of Bogus going bald, okay? Number two,
we
make fun of me either being too skinny or having big teeth. Number three, we make fun of your girth. I think everybody's been, maybe not Pete, but everybody I think has been fair game here, not just you.
Yeah, but not as much. My waistline is a storyline, I would say, twice a week. Everybody else's image is off limits. What? I mean, Pete's back at the shop. Pete, why is your image off limits? Can I not make fun of your weight? Why is that not allowed?
Because you have no class, that's why.
What do you mean I have no class? But I got a big ass, and that's fine?
You're a jerk. That's why we call you fat.
Whoa.
So, okay.
There's some real hostility.
Mraz is fat.
There was some real anger behind Pete just now.
Yeah, Pete just made it real.
Stuff another bag of Doritos.
Pretzel bun?
I think it's because you are so easily mean. You really can be mean.
No, I'm not. I'm the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, come on.
I am. I'd give my oversized shirt off the back for any of you right now. I'm the man. I do it out of love. Out of love.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fat. I am fat. We should be able to be joking with each other. I'm fat. Clearly, based on Pete's reaction, we're not allowed to. Fat. Wow. I love smelling those balls.
I think there's something that maybe you and Pete need to work out where Pete finds you to be really mean. I think maybe me and Bogish don't feel the same way quite as much, but I think it feels like Pilati feels like you're really mean.
I don't know if it's quarantine hostility right now. Maybe Pete and I can work it out the next time we see each other when we're 47. I am fat.
That really did dive bomb out of nowhere. It was a fun morning, and then about
one of my answers. There it is.
3 minutes ago, Pete just dropped that hammer on you.
Pete needs WrestleMania to happen in the worst way.
That's
right
so
now.
True. He's had no Monday Night Raw, no Thursday Night Rage in the cage.
I need to see a human being. That's one. Enough of this. Let's go.
Yo, oh. What's Pete going to be like on June 1 when we're still doing
this? Oh, man. Still fat, I'll tell you that much.
Get this guy a wrestling event. Is AEW the one with Taz also shut down?
Yes.
Oh, get this guy a wrestling. Oh, get this guy a scripted sporting event ASAP, okay? He's losing it. Somebody get Roman Reigns in the top buckle immediately. For these Monday nights, you brought up a lot of good ones. Let me add to this. 94 Montana Elway. This was the last great duel between the two. Montana is a Chief. It's at Old Mile High Stadium. Montana to Willie Davis, corner of the end zone. Chiefs beat the Broncos at Mile High. 85, the undefeated Bears go to Miami. This is Dan Marino handing the 85 Bears the only loss of the season. It's the highest rated Monday night game ever. Dolphins-Bears, 85. And then way back one, 83, the highest scoring Monday night game before that Rams and Chiefs game. Green Bay over Washington, 48-47. There's 11 touchdowns. Mark wow. Mosley misses a field goal with 3 seconds left to win it. These are all far superior. You talked about the Jumbo Elliott game. That game, Jets trailed 30-7 in the fourth quarter. 30-7. They end up winning 40-37. It's one of the craziest games of all time. The he did what game? Antonio Freeman on his back catches the game-winning touchdown in overtime that same season. These are so much better than 6 turnovers from Tony Romo, Cowboys, Bills? What are we doing? And even the Colts-Patriots. Do you remember the Colts beating the Patriots 40-21 in 2005? Yeah. Out of all of their games, that might be the least memorable Patriots and Colts game. It was a 19-point win.
And even if you want to highlight games that are on ESPN and sell it to you, we just rattled off all these other ones. I'm sorry, do we need more marble racing? Why can't we run Monday night doubleheaders the next 5 weeks and highlight 2 games at a time? What's wrong with that? What else? What in the program are we doing right now?
I don't know. This should be constant countdown to the greatest games ever. I mean, ESPN owns how many college football games? Just run college football marathons of great games. I mean, they own all of that inventory. And instead, what, they got around the horn guys that are sitting at home on FaceTime? I mean, we've got PTI, we've got Kornheiser, like, in a sweater in his kitchen. I mean, really? This is instead the programming? You own all of the greatest college football games ever. We know that the Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones spat, animosity, rivalry, dates back to Jerry wanting credit and more control over personnel decisions by 1993. He had hired Jerry in 89, hired Jimmy rather in 89, away from Miami to handle his organization when he was a brand new owner. Jerry Jones said, I want to make a splash with this hire. I'm going to give that hire control, full tilt football responsibilities. You do your thing. Jimmy Johnson walked into that Cowboys locker room, realized, my God, this is a really bad team. There's not a lot of talent in the cupboard. Our best player is Herschel Walker. We're going to trade Herschel Walker, collect draft picks. We're going to build through the draft my kind of team. Jimmy Johnson would build a Super Bowl champion and 90s team of the decade and win the 92 and 93 Super Bowls. But by the Super Bowl in 93, it's basically done. Jimmy and Jerry can't see eye to eye, and two huge egos. Jimmy wants Jerry to stay out of it. Jerry Jones wants more credit. Jerry Jones wants his finger into everything. They can't make it work, and Jimmy Johnson says, screw you, I'm out of here, and leaves. And that's when Jerry brings in Barry Switzer. They end up going to 2 NFC championship games. They lose in 94 to the Niners, win the whole thing in 95. And that's basically the last breathing life into that 90s dynasty. It was so short, basically a 6-year period, 5 or 6 years. That's it. They win 3 championships. years later, we're now, what, 30, 25 years later, 25 years later, and these guys still clearly have something amiss because we know that Jimmy Johnson's now a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He found out in January, an emotional on-television live reaction on Fox, and he'll be inducted into Canton. However, somebody asked Jimmy Johnson on Twitter, how would you feel if Jerry Jones inducted you into the Cowboys Ring of Honor? This fan, this person on Twitter said, it's long overdue. They need to bury the hatchet maybe this year. Now, is this not amazing? That the Dallas Cowboys don't have Jimmy Johnson in their Ring of Fame, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame will have him in Canton. There's going to be a bronze bust of Jimmy Johnson in Canton, and he's not going to be in the Cowboys Ring of Honor. Clearly, because there's still an insecurity from Jerry Jones about who knew the football and who was responsible for the dynasty. And obviously, it was Jimmy. Obviously. Now, Jimmy could not replicate that in Miami with the Dolphins, but Jimmy was the reason they won Super Bowls, not Jerry Jones. And Jerry just can't admit that because Jerry for 25 years has tried to prove that he knew football and clearly does not. But Jimmy Johnson, in response to this question, how would you feel if Jerry inducted you into our Ring of Honor, takes a very passive-aggressive shot. He says, Aikman will present me, Bradshaw will put the jacket on me. Of course, talking about his Pro Football Hall of Fame induction. Here's Jimmy Johnson saying, screw the Ring of Honor, I'm going directly to Canton. I mean, this is obviously a shot at Jerry, isn't it? It has to be. I mean, Mraz, is it possible that Jimmy Johnson misread this tweet and thought this guy was asking him about the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I find that hard to believe because it says, how would you feel if Jerry inducted you into our Ring of Honor to bury the hatchet? That's clearly not a question about Canton of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
There's no way that Jimmy Johnson misread that. Absolutely no way. My guess is anything that mentions Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson rereads about four or five times before
right.
even responding.
Right. So clearly he's taking a shot, right? This is
yes.
obviously a shot. And
yes.
I'm going to get inducted by Troy Aikman and Terry Bradshaw. That's where I'm getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
It's a message sent. I'm going to the real Hall of Fame, not having my name slapped up around that inner circle because apparently I'm not good enough in Jerry's eyes because Jerry's so self-conscious about himself.
Is that not also insane that we are 25 years removed and Jimmy Johnson's going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and not the Cowboys Ring of Honor?
Right, and to be frank, this is probably Jerry Jones' worst nightmare because I think when they were doing all of these moments with the NFL 100 and the expanded Hall of Fame class, we were kind of on the same page on Jimmy Johnson and Bill Cowher. Really great coaches, debatable on going to the Hall of Fame, and for Jimmy Johnson, even more debatable because of his length of time coaching, obviously. But when these guys get put in the Hall of Fame, and specifically Jimmy Johnson, and Jerry Jones has sat there and maybe had a very underreported outside of Dallas situation where Jimmy Johnson was still not in that Ring of Honor, now it blows up and becomes this big thing where people notice, well, if he's good enough for the Hall of Fame, how the heck is he not good enough for our Ring of Honor? And now here's Jerry Jones having to deal with the backlash of this, and maybe Jimmy Johnson, well, who knows, who probably thought about it, didn't think about it as much, really having the flame stoked. This NFL 100, bad scene for now Jerry Jones because he looks even more childish.
He does. Jerry looks even sillier. Jimmy Johnson should have always been in that Ring of Honor. Look, there's two coaches in franchise history that have won a Super Bowl in Dallas. Tom Landry, Jimmy Johnson. They both have to be in your Ring of Honor. They have to be.
Well, Barry Switzer won one as well.
I guess that's technically true. Do we even count that Super Bowl?
No, I mean, you have to. It's a Super Bowl. You have to count it. I know
I guess
it wasn't
you're
his
right.
guys. He coached them.
I'm always reminded of the clip from, it was Moose Johnston. He was in that 95 America's game by NFL Films. And he said, we won the Super Bowl in spite of coaching that year. I mean, that's the most damning quote. And I've asked Daryl on this show about that quote. That's the most damning quote about a coach of all time.
You're right. But he was still the head coach, still in position. You can't just say that those are the only two guys that won a Super Bowl.
That's fair. I mean, how could Jimmy Johnson not be in that Ring of Honor? And then he gets to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is the ultimate stick it right in the tailpipe for Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones. And he knew exactly what he was tweeting when he says, oh, you know what? Bradshaw's going to induct me. Or what? It's going to be Aikman's going to induct me and Bradshaw's going to hang the jacket on me. That's the only induction I need to worry about right now. This is very clearly a shot at Jerry. And you think they'll ever make up? Do you think that this will ever, they'll ever get the hatchet buried?
Here's the straw poll question. Does Jerry Jones get mentioned in the speech?
No.
See, that's going to be notable. And that's going to be the biggest story that comes out of Hall of Fame weekend when and hopefully it happens.
No,
that will
he
be
won't,
the story
right?
Because he's not what's he going to do? Is he going to mention his Dolphins days? I mean, how do you talk about being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Not the College Hall of Fame. This isn't basketball. The Pro Football Hall of Fame and the man that hired you and gave you the opportunity in Dallas where you won the Super Bowls. You are not going to mention him in your entire speech. Not once. I'm not going to have to gloss him 15 times and keep mentioning him. Not once. That will be notable, and that will be the biggest story to come out of Hall of Fame weekend.
Okay, so this is interesting. I mean, I don't think he's going to compliment Jerry Jones, but maybe he cites that, you know, me and Jerry didn't always get along or something like that.
Something like that. You got to acknowledge his existence. You have to. Otherwise, I think Jimmy Johnson actually loses points there.
Okay, so I tend to agree. I think that Jimmy will address Jerry on Hall of Fame weekend, address it. But I don't think he's going to send a compliment. Like, I'm so glad that Jerry Jones took a shot on this little old college football coach. You know, he saw something in me that nobody else saw. I don't think it's going to be complimentary.
No, but I think, again, if he completely ignores him and pretends Jerry Jones did not exist when he did give him the job, I think then the public slanted eye goes, we're so anti-Jerry too. Jimmy, you should be a little more mature than that.
We were talking earlier after Stunned to a News about awful neighbor that you've had, because there was a story that Bogues did at the Stunned to a News where a guy was upset that his neighbor was playing music too loud. So he went over there with a sword, a 2.5-foot sword, and chased the guy around. Holly tweets in, I lived above a man who thought he was Elvis. He would sing into a microphone all night and trash his own place. I reported him, and after he found out, he went out on the stairs and yelled in an Elvis accent that he was the King Mama and that his people would harm us. Think about that.
Are we sure it wasn't Elvis?
That is aggressive. The King Mama. He yelled in the Elvis voice. The police came. He had written, help me, in the window in what looked like blood. So the police thought he was a hostage. Oh. He charged the police. They tackled him. He did not have a hostage, but he admitted to them that he was high, drunk, and hadn't taken his medicine in a year. It was a pure nightmare.
That ain't nothing but a hound dog.
That is so aggressive. We thought we had bad neighbors. Holly lived next to a guy that called himself Elvis and charged the police.
Well,
wrote in what looked like blood on the window.
If I call Bilotti fat one more time and he shows up to work when we return in an Elvis costume, I am out.
It's going to look like
out.
The same thing.
I am out.
He's going to write on that glass in between you and me in the studio. Something like, I have him. He's here.
Got Connor's him. Connor's hidden under the board.
Pay me all the money. Now, Ridgely tweets in, yeah, I agree. Mraz was the nicest, most congenial man I've ever met. Hashtag Ridgely sucks. Now, Ridgely came in as a listener, stepped in for your job on the day that you were boycotting, and you dared to write a sign that said Ridgely sucks, and you call yourself a kind sir.
First of all, he was a scab. He was like Rick Reed pitching for the Mets. Scam. He crossed my picket line and showed that my job was replaceable. Second of all, I don't want to hear from Ridgely, because when it was all time to end and the show was over and I was a little annoyed at him, he said, hey, Mraz, can I have the Ridgely sucks sign? He went home with it. It's hanging somewhere in his bedroom.
You call the guy who's a hard worker, quiet, stuck to himself and listened to the show, a guy that sucks.
He sucked.
You created a hashtag out of it.
He should have been pro me in that situation. It was a hashtag. It was trending. Ridgely sucks.
Manny from PA tweets, let's be honest, Mraz does this to himself. He brings up points why he's fat at least 3 to 5 times a week. Last week he tweeted, quote, what should I have for my second breakfast? That is true. You do put a target on your back.
Again, but why doesn't everybody have a target on their back? Why can't we all embrace our fat? Why does everybody have to hide their fallacies? Why do we have to pretend it? It's ridiculous. By the way, my second breakfast just arrived on my table as well.
Okay, what was your first one?
My first breakfast this morning at about 6 a.m., I had a nice blueberry muffin. Now I have a chocolate rice cake with a layer of peanut butter and a layer of sliced bananas.
Okay. I love the story from Friday where you're doing the show from home and you go in to ask Danielle, hey, what do you think about making chocolate chip pancakes? Is that what you asked her?
I did. I said, she makes really good chocolate chip pancakes, and she's been eating the chocolate chips like the snacks, and I bought them 4 pancakes, and we still haven't had them. So I said, why don't we do this? And now, mind you, she's working from home as well. She turns to me very quickly and very angrily and said, just because you're working at home doesn't mean we've turned this into a Perkins. Right to
greatest
the cereal bowl
line. Danielle said, this is not a Perkins. I'm not taking your pancake order.
Good for
her.
She's
had it. She has had it with me. She wants me basically to set up a studio at my parents' house at this point. Get out.
Just because you're working at home and have no pants on in the morning doesn't mean I'm your short order waitress here.
It's so true.
Last week, Tua Tagovailoa released a video of himself taking a snap, drop it back to pass, and snapping a pass off, and looked pretty good. Looked very fluid, looked very comfortable, looked very good, which is a great thing for any of the teams that are looking to draft him high or any of the team's fan bases that could be in the running for drafting him high. But I would say buyer beware. I mean, it's a 9-second video. I need to see a little bit more than that. This is one snap, dropping back to pass, one throw. Does he look like that after 30 throws? If he had a pro day, would he look like that? Can he do that for just one snap, or can he do that for 2 hours? Can he make every throw? Like, that looked like it was a relatively short throw. Can he wind up and go downfield with that hip? Can he get the base leverage? Can he get the mobility when he has to roll out and then throw a deep one? Can he take a hit? I mean, there's a lot of question marks that are about far more than one 9-second clip where people go, oh my God, he looks so good. Oh, wow, he looks so fluid. He looks so good. I mean, come on. It's one clip. So people were going gaga over this last week, but we asked you today as part of your poll question in the social media portion of the DA show, do you buy or have more confidence in Tua's hip? It's time for advanced analytics.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
So looks like the video that was posted on Twitter, for most of our listeners at least, did not sell them. It looked like it sold maybe some of the national media, but not our listeners. The D-Aliens are smarter than that. On Twitter, 73% say no, the video did not give me more confidence in Tua's hip. And on Facebook, much of the same. 71% said no way. Andrew added on Facebook, nothing's going to give me confidence until he plays a couple of seasons with no major injuries. No one can predict how old injuries will act up. And I think that that's fair. I mean, look, I don't know if you could draft Tua, have him play as the rookie of the year, and have a tremendous early part of his career, then have some awful injury pop up 3 seasons from now and say, well, he was a busted draft pick. But I do think that I'm not going to be very confident in Tua's health until I see him have a couple of seasons under his belt. And that's why drafting him high with this draft pick, if you have to get it right, I still wouldn't do. And I could be in the minority nationally because people love Tua and he's got a great head on his shoulders and he comes from a really great family and he put up big points and big yards at Alabama and he's a fighter, so he's been through the 2 ankle injuries, but I got 2 ankle injuries, 1 at each side and this hip, and I'm going to take him number 2 overall. Sorry, I can't do it. I just can't do that and feel like that's being responsible. Could I come back to be haunted by Tua later in his career when he is dominant and I ended up taking Jordan Love? Yeah, maybe. You know, Tua ends up having a multi-Pro Bowl career and I took Justin Herbert, who ended up being just another guy. Maybe. But I'm sorry, I just can't put the stakes of my franchise on a young man who has had three significant injuries before he even left college. Robert DePica tweets, let Mraz know that strapping the step tracker to Eli's paws doesn't count. Bogish wins this one hands down. Mraz, people are questioning whether you actually run 5 miles a day.
All right, I'm going to have to figure out some kind of tracker on my phone and do this and post it. And frankly, it might be the cold open tomorrow, so we'll see. But yeah, guys, look, I'm getting out of the house. I'm trying to be healthy. What do you want me to do? Do you think I'm just sitting down and burying Doritos? You can only do that 20 hours
well,
out of the day, not 24.
I mean, let's face it. That's what most of all of the rest of your days ever have been.
But that's the thing. I have plenty of time for that. I have plenty. That's probably why I'm not losing it enough at a big enough clip. I'm going to come home, and I'm sure I'm going to have a couple scoops of ice cream. I know I'm making some kind of tacos later, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to go for the run.
Ridgely tweets, Mraz failed to mention that I was giving him constant support when I was there. I held the line during his strike when it looked like he was about to break, and I was on his side. I was on team hashtag stand with Mraz, and he screenshotted multiple tweets where he did use the hashtag stand with Mraz.
But he was sitting in my chair doing my job. If you stood with me, you would have declined. You would have declined. Get out of here with that take, Ridgely.
This is a guy that came in to shadow the show, took over your job, did it well, defended you up until that point, and you are bagging on him.
He sat in my chair. He didn't say, D.A., I'm not going to sit here and answer the phones. He said, I am going to learn Mraz's job. If he stood with me, he would have stood with me, not stood in place of me. I think he needs a little read up on the definition.
Ridgely tweeted on January the 20th, which now feels like a bazillion years ago.
Oh, man.
Can I stand in solidarity while sitting in Mraz's seat as his scab at the same time? Hashtag stand with Mraz. On February the 4th, he tweeted, for organizing such a great lineup of interviews Super Bowl week, does Mraz deserve an apology after you guys wrote him about it? Anybody could do his job. And if this leads to another strike, when do you guys need me? Hashtag stand with Mraz. See, I mean, it might have been a little passive-aggressive, but he is standing with you in those two tweets.
So, no, he's not. So basically what that's telling me is he wants me to strike so he has a chance at employment. That is what that's telling me.
So let's get to the epic fail this morning, because we played from the archives a clip from 2 years ago when Bilotti was trying to get ready for his diet, getting ready for his wedding, and he was going on a diet, and then Mraz just clowned on him. And, you know, Bilotti came in from the top ropes, and Mraz probably deserved it. It's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Everybody's been, maybe not Pete, but everybody I think has been fair game here, not just you.
Yeah, but not as much. My waistline is a storyline, I would say, twice a week. Pete's back at the shop. Pete, why is your image off limits? Can I not make fun of your weight? Why is that not allowed?
Because you have no class, that's why.
What do you mean I have no class? But I got a big ass, and that's fine?
You're a jerk, that's why we call you fat.
Whoa.
So, okay.
Some real hostility. There was some real anger behind Pete just now.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah, Pete just made it real.
Just fucking up a bag of Doritos. Boy.
Pretzel bun?
I think it's because you are so easily mean. You really can be mean.
I do it out of love. Out of love.
Oh, yeah.
I am fat. We should be able to joke with each other.
He has broken it!
I am fat. Clearly, based on Pete's reaction, we're not allowed to. Fat! Wow.
I think there's something that maybe you and Pete need to work out where Pete finds you to be really mean. I think maybe me and Bogish don't feel the same way quite as much, but I think it feels like Blatt feels like you're really mean.
I don't know if it's quarantine hostility right now. Maybe Pete and I can work it out the next time we see each other when we're 47. I am fat!
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
The quote from Pete, "You're a jerk, which is why we call you fat," is one of the most direct blows in DA show history. That is a direct shot across the bow.
I always speak the truth.
You're a jerk, which is why we call you fat.
The name jerk is not used enough anymore, by the way. It's a name call.
So, yeah, I think Pete's got some pent-up frustration. I think he's quarantine frustration. And I think that at some point in time, you guys are going to need to get on the same page, because at some point in 2021, you guys will be working in the same room together.
We hope.
So tomorrow's a Trash Tuesday. Fear not. If there are things that you'd like to trash, let's do so tomorrow. Also, in the middle of quarantine, my wife and I got a kitten. And this kitten is out of control. It's just unhinged, out of control kitten energy that I need to talk about tomorrow, because I need to know if this is normal behavior. I mean, Mraz, you've never really had a cat, right? Always little dogs.
Yeah, when I was a kid, cat, but yeah, just dogs the last 15 years.
Little dogs that are basically the size of cats.
Yes, exactly. Big cats.
Are you taking your walks with Eli at this point?
Oh, yeah. He's got to get tired out. Eli will go to sleep nice if he goes for that jog with me. He has.
Oh, that's true, because a Pomeranian or a Pomsky in this case is going to have a lot of pent-up energy all day long in the house.
That's another thing. I have to get him out for that long. He'll sleep at night, or he won't sleep at night. It'll be a disaster between that and a baby.
Will he just tear up the room? I mean, what's he going to do?
He runs in circles, rips pillows off couches. We have baby-locked garbage, not for the baby, for him, because he'll go through the trash. It's insanity. It's like living with Cosmo Kramer in real life. That's what living with my mom's is.
So Eli the Pomsky is just a nightmare if he's not tuckered out at night.
He has already done 15 trips up and down the stairs next to me, just looking at me, seeing if I'm ready to go out yet. He is crazy. He just wants to go out and just get energy out. Otherwise, everything's a disaster in here.
Okay, so we'll bring this up tomorrow as part of a Trash Tuesday here on the DA Show. That'll do it for us this morning here on the program. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the wheels of steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, your wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headline today. Also, thanks to Billy Giagalone, your assistant producer today on the show. Be good, and be good to one another. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.